no fury like a woman scorned.
Then I started getting pissed off at him, so I emptied both guns into him.
I did really bad things to get drugs.
I killed a man. I blew his face off. If that's vivid enough for you.
Cannibalism is not my choice.
I was young, I was beautiful, I had the whole world in front of me.
The people here are miserable. It's a struggle in here every day.
I'm sitting on death row. How do you accept that?
I got my chance and I blew it.
On this episode, three women.
He bit me here. We both had the gun and the gun went off.
I just heard them beating him. He screamed, "Melissa, help," and that just broke my heart.
Their intimate confessions, exclusively from prison.
I was a habitual fornicator. I enjoyed sex.
It took this for me to realize that nothing's free.
I'm sorry. It wasn't supposed to turn out the way it did. It wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth it at all.
And brutal crimes.
I just been stabbed. Somebody stabbed me. I'm hurt bad. I was set up.
Hold on for EMS. Hold on.
She trained the gun and said, "Today, you're going to die."
My name is Jennifer Harris. I've been convicted of attempted first-degree murder and assault with a deadly weapon.
Aurora, Colorado is known for its laid-back atmosphere. But on a cloudy Saturday afternoon in the summer of 2003, this quiet community was rattled. At 4:03 p.m., just as a thunderstorm loomed over the horizon, officers received a 911 call.
911 emergency.
Yes, dear, my ex-boyfriend tried to hurt me.
And what did you
do? He was biting me, and I grabbed my gun and shot him.
Officer Chris Carlton rushed to the scene and found 55-year-old Mamadou Balo laying in the street with a gunshot wound to the chest. Inside a nearby apartment, Jennifer Harris, a 39-year-old ice cream truck driver, was waiting for police.
She told me she found some documentation that her boyfriend, who she knew as Mamadou Balo, was somebody else.
And she confronts him about these papers. According to Jennifer, he hits her on her head.
At that moment, I knew that he was going to try and kill me. I got my gun out of my purse. I told him that the gun was cocked and loaded and that he should leave.
Jennifer said that Mr. Balo went for the gun. The gun somehow went off, striking Mr. Balo in the chest.
Mamadou Balo, a bus driver and African immigrant, was rushed to the hospital and miraculously survived to tell his story.
He told the police how Jennifer was waiting in the bedroom for him with a loaded gun.
This was not the first time Jennifer had been involved in a shooting.
Jennifer Harris had shot a prior boyfriend. She said that she was advised by somebody that the next time you shoot your partner, you should do so to kill.
I didn't attempt to kill Mamadou. All I wanted to do was get Mamadou out of my house.
One of five children, Jennifer Diane Harris was born to a middle-class family in Las Vegas, Nevada on March 19, 1964.
I had a wonderful childhood. When it came to financial substance, we didn't lack any.
Their house was like the cool house.
But tragedy struck when Jennifer's father committed suicide. She was 7 years old.
It was truly traumatizing and overwhelming, and I still think about it.
At age 14, Jennifer got pregnant and gave birth to daughter Antoinette.
I was always told my mom was a little fast. I actually really don't know who my biological father is.
The single mom dropped out of high school and played the field. By age 21, she had two more children and countless ex-boyfriends.
I was a habitual fornicator. I enjoyed sex, and so I would normally have more than one boyfriend.
She's materialistic. You don't have money, you have any issues, take care of my kids, you're out.
On the prowl for men willing to part with their money, Jennifer got hired as a blackjack dealer on the Vegas Strip.
On my breaks, I would go and play the machines, and I would hit jackpots.
She won $28,000 playing keno. So from there, she considered herself a professional gambler.
Despite hitting the jackpot at work, Jennifer's home life was a complete bust.
She had a lot of violent relationships. I don't know if it's my mom violent or just the men she ran across were violent. Mom could be sweet, and she could be somebody you don't want to cross.
In 1986, 22-year-old Jennifer dated auto mechanic Eddie Jones. Despite a 20-year age difference, they met at the casino and hit it off.
Their relationship was violent from the beginning.
When Antoinette revealed to her mom that Eddie had allegedly been inappropriate with her, Jennifer took matters into her own hands.
Eddie said some perverse things to her. I said, let me show you, dear, what I'm gonna do to a pervert. And I put her in the car with me.
I just remember she just pressed on the gas and we just hit him.
I went and I ran him over.
Eddie suffered a broken leg, but didn't press charges. Days later, the dysfunctional couple reconciled.
I felt really bad. I would help him clean his house, have oral sex with him if he needed it, whatever.
He knew how to get to my mom money.
For years, the violence between Jennifer and Eddie continued to escalate until one tumultuous night in 1988.
He was drunk. He was belligerent. That's when he hit me in the leg.
According to Jennifer, the blow to her knee landed her in the hospital. She turned to an ex-boyfriend for protection. He brought with him his 9mm gun.
Eddie called and said he was gonna come over and finish what he started. And then Eddie was amming on the door. 15 minutes later, I got his 9mm, cracked the door, and pointed the gun at Eddie's kneecap.
She aimed and fired the bullet.
I barely touched that trigger and it went off.
Once again, Eddie Jones refused to press charges. Although Jennifer could have faced attempted murder, she pled the case down to a misdemeanor.
Eddie Jones did not want her prosecuted. He loved Jennifer.
It was almost like a slap on the hand. Maybe a week in jail and she was out.
Eddie stopped hitting me. I mean, that sobered him up.
Coming up, an ice cream truck driver becomes a cold-blooded shooter.
She was pointing the gun at him, telling him that he was a liar, that she was going to kill him.
As far as I'm concerned, I had the right to bear arms.
And later, murder in paradise.
Melissa is a manipulator, and she was playing two sides.
By August of 1998, 34-year-old Jennifer Harris had been in numerous abusive relationships. But Jennifer gave as good as she got when she shot boyfriend Eddie Jones in the kneecap and claimed self-defense. Despite their violent past, Eddie still refused to press charges.
I never handled a gun, shot a gun. I didn't know just barely touching a trigger, it would go off, and it did. It really did. I went to jail for 5 days. They eventually dismissed the charges.
Ready for a change, Jennifer left her grown children and decided to follow her latest flame to Aurora, Colorado. But like most of her relationships, it soon fizzled. She began working at a local bus company and later purchased an ice cream truck for additional income.
The ice cream truck was awesome. I sold over 70 novelties.
In this certain neighborhoods, they were waiting for my mom to come. And they'd be, Miss Jenny.
In April 2000, Jennifer met fellow bus driver, 52-year-old Mamadou Balo, an immigrant from Africa's Ivory Coast, who sweet-talked her.
He was telling me how beautiful I was, and he just wanted me to shake his hand. Well, I eventually moved in with him.
They seemed very, very, very close.
But within a couple years, according to Jennifer, the relationship changed.
He hit me in the back of the head, slapped me. I fought back with him. I ended up going to jail.
She portrayed herself as a victim of domestic violence, but what the criminal record shows was that she was actually the perpetrator of domestic violence.
The prosecution would later contend that Jennifer became aggressive when she suspected Mamadou was cheating.
She had found him having contact with this other woman. She was intensely jealous.
But what Jennifer discovered didn't involve another woman. It involved another identity.
Here, right on the top, is documents showing that he's someone else. His age was different. His date of birth was different.
According to the prosecution, the deception sent Jennifer Harris into a rage. She put a deadly plan into action.
She hid her ice cream truck so he wouldn't know that she was home. Jennifer was sitting there on the bed waiting for him with a loaded 38 caliber handgun.
She trained the gun directly at him and said, "Today, you're going to die." Then she ordered him to the floor, pointing the gun at him, telling him that he was a liar, telling him that she was going to kill him. And he was trying to escape. She aimed directly at his heart. She pulled the trigger. But because he was in the process of getting up off the floor, it changed the trajectory of the bullet.
Jennifer argues that she never intended to shoot Mamadou. In fact, she claims he was attacking her when the gun accidentally discharged.
He called me a female dog and punched me in the temporal bone. I knew that he would probably kill me. So far as I'm concerned, I had the right to bear arms.
Mamadou tries to get the gun from her. They end up in a struggle.
He bit me here, and then he finally got a good grip right there. So he's biting me, and we're both holding the gun, and the gun went off. I didn't pull the trigger. I never put my finger on the trigger.
Despite being shot in the chest, Mamadou wrestled the gun away from Jennifer and stumbled outside the house.
I heard a noise which sounded like a firecracker. I looked out and there was a gentleman. He just laid down. I just ran upstairs and called 911.
Paramedics rushed Mamadou to the hospital where he spent a week in intensive care.
Mamadou Balo should have died in this case if it wasn't for the fact that he was able to get out of that apartment and get immediate medical attention.
Mamadou told authorities that Jennifer was trying to kill him and that he only fought back after being shot. Immediately, Jennifer was picked up for questioning.
I just wanted him to get the fuck out of my house. I don't know how the gun went off. I don't know if it was me or if he hit the trigger.
She was very insistent. There was a struggle over the gun. She didn't mean to shoot Mamadou. Things that she said led me to believe that she was not being truthful.
A ballistics expert was able to determine that that gun had to be fired at least 3 feet away from Mamadou.
If they were tussling over the gun, it would be difficult for it to be more than 3 feet away from Mamadou.
Authorities charged Jennifer with attempted first-degree murder. With Mamadou's testimony and the ballistics report, prosecutors felt they had a strong case against Jennifer Harris. But suddenly, the star witness for the prosecution had a change of heart.
By the time we went to trial, Mamadou didn't want to prosecute. He actually still loved Jennifer.
During trial, he told them that he lied.
He just kept saying to us, "I don't want Jennifer to go to jail. I want her to come home," which is typical in domestic violence cases.
You often find that victims recant their testimony. Part of it is the psychological power that the perpetrator has over the victim.
What she didn't anticipate was that we had the forensic evidence to prove both her story and Mamadou's story weren't true.
I prayed that the truth would come out and that I would be vindicated. I thought I was going to have a heart attack. I literally thought I was going to die.
In July 2007, Jennifer's case was reversed on a technicality. She was tried again and convicted a second time. Her sentence was reduced to 38 years. Mamadou did admit to taking on a false identity. He was not charged with any crime. Jennifer Harris is serving out her sentence at the Women's Correctional Facility in Denver, Colorado.
Coming to prison is like wandering in a wilderness. The responsibility I take is that maybe I was a busybody going in his duffel bag. I don't think anyone can attempt to kill anyone. If you want to kill someone, you can kill someone.
Coming up, a love triangle ends in a murder.
He just went psycho, and it starts screaming.
Lindsay had a MAC-10, holds that gun high up like he's in a movie, and unloads a barrage of fire. local girl got tied into this love triangle.
It was going to be a ripoff. It was going to be drugs and money.
I just never thought that they would have gone that extreme and killed him.
Melissa set all these chain of events into action. She's a snake, and she set them up.
My name is Melissa Ordonez. I was convicted of accessory to burglary, robbery, and kidnapping. I was sentenced to a 10-year prison term.
It was a typical quiet Monday night in the tropical community of Kaneohe, Hawaii. Longtime resident Ann Bauer was sitting down to watch the 10 o'clock news when gunshots pierced through the warm evening breeze.
I heard pop, 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 and saw a figure firing a gun. So I call 911.
Suddenly, Ann had a front row seat to a breaking news story that was unfolding behind her home. She had no idea she had witnessed a crime that would make front page headlines in Oahu for months to come.
Witnesses say it sounded like a war zone. 30 rounds fired in front of passing cars. It was just the most cold and calculated murder I've ever seen in Hawaii.
The victim, 27-year-old Benjamin Grajeda, was allegedly a drug dealer from North Hollywood, California. He had been blasted 16 times with a MAC-10.
Grajeda's body was covered in tattoos, but you could see the bullet holes. I mean, it was like it was riddled.
Authorities arrested 26-year-old Jericho Lindsay and 35-year-old William Freeman, longtime friends from Alabama.
Mr. Freeman was the first person they caught. As he was placed in custody, the first words out of his mouth was, "All this over, girl."
The girl in question was 21-year-old Melissa Ordonez, a local college student with a checkered past. Detectives soon discovered the seductive beauty was at the core of a deadly love triangle involving the shooter, Jericho Lindsay, and the victim, Benjamin Grajeda. Authorities believe Melissa was also the mastermind behind a four-person scheme to rob Grajeda of $50,000 in cash, as well as his cocaine stash.
Melissa set the whole thing up, gave him information about the drugs and the money.
She's used to the high life. She saw an opportunity to get more and took it.
Born to teenage parents on September 27, 1985, Melissa Ann Ordonez was raised by her grandmother in central Maui.
I felt really hurt and abandoned, and even though my grandmother was loving me, she wasn't my mother.
But growing up in the sunny tropics wasn't just about luaus and surfing. Hawaii is also a drug trafficker's paradise, ranking fifth in the nation for its locals' use of methamphetamines, known here by its street name, ICE.
Eighth grade, I started using crystal meth, marijuana, started smoking cigarettes, drinking alcohol.
She knew the effects of drugs, but it was part of her life.
I became addicted to crystal meth, and it just gave me this powerful feeling.
The fast life caught up with the 19-year-old in September 2004, when federal agents closed in on a Maui drug ring. Authorities seized 2 pounds of meth and $250,000 in cash. The bust resulted in the arrest of 13 suspects, including Melissa Ordonez.
I've only known one guy out of the whole ring, and the feds caught me and him talking about drugs.
The feds charged Melissa with conspiracy to possess and to distribute ICE. She got lucky and walked away with just 3 years probation.
The original charge carried a 10-year mandatory minimum, and the judge gave her 1 day time served. So this was one of the great breaks of all time.
I thought that would have been a wake-up call. So I moved away from Maui to change my life.
Melissa says she gave up drugs, moved to Oahu, and enrolled at the University of Hawaii. But there was one boyfriend she continued dating, Jericho Lindsay, a 26-year-old suspected murderer from Alabama. He showered Melissa with gifts.
He would take me shopping, spend $5,000 on me at a time. I loved it.
Mr. Lindsay had two friends who had suggested the idea of ripping off drug dealers. And so Melissa seemed to be following that trail of drugs and money.
This guy was cold. His eyes were cold, his thoughts were cold, and the guy would take you out in a heartbeat.
The couple had been dating for about 8 months when 27-year-old Benjamin Grajeda came along. Melissa says she called Jericho and told him it was over.
I met Benjamin one night after clubbing. I've only known him for about 2 weeks, and I started dating him.
Benjamin Grajeda told Melissa he owned an electronics store on the mainland, but police claim that was a cover for being a drug dealer.
He's actually part of a Hispanic gang out of East LA. He came over here posing as a musician.
I assumed by his tattoos he had a criminal history, but he came off very harmless.
Detective Cheryl Sunia believes Melissa knew exactly what she was doing.
Melissa is a manipulator. She is a compulsive liar. And she was in touch with Lindsay. She was in touch with Grajeda. Melissa was playing two sides.
As Melissa tells it, she was only dating Benjamin Grajeda, but Jericho Lindsay had a hard time letting her go.
He came to Oahu unexpectedly and wanted to know why I was leaving him. He was crying and telling me to please be with him.
Along for the trip were Jericho Lindsay's two friends, 35-year-old William Freeman and 29-year-old Reginald Petway. But what allegedly started as a lover's plea for reconciliation ended in a violent shootout between Benjamin Grajeda and Jericho Lindsay.
She let Grajeda know that Lindsay was bothering her. And she's actually with Lindsay in her Cadillac. And there's a traffic incident where she jumps out and gets into the car with Grajeda, and then Lindsay gets behind the wheel of the Cadillac and rams the back of Grajeda's car. Also following that is Freeman and Petway in a Hummer. So Grajeda takes out a gun and fires a few rounds at the Hummer.
Benjamin just went psycho, and it starts screaming, and I'm terrified.
It was a really bad meeting because there was going to be a payback.
Coming up, a vicious shooting on the streets of Paradise.
I remember he yelled and screamed, "Melissa, help."
And later,
her and Adam had decided they could lure him to one of the vacant apartments and that Adam could hit him in the head with this hammer and they would rob him.
By May 2007, 21-year-old Melissa Ordonez was still on probation, but was partying hard and living large, spoiled by her boyfriend, Jericho Lindsay. But when she took an interest in a new and richer boyfriend named Benjamin Grajeda, things turned violent.
It was just a strange coincidence of bad things that Lindsay and this guy happened to come together in one of our streets one evening.
The rivalry for Melissa Ordonez between Benjamin Grajeda, a suspected drug dealer from California, and Jericho Lindsay, a murder suspect from Alabama, became heated when a traffic incident escalated into a shootout on the streets of Honolulu.
Lindsay had told Melissa, "Grajeda started a war that I'm going to finish." As a way to cover herself, she told Mr. Lindsay, "Well, I'm not really with Mr. Grajeda. I'm just trying to use him to help you get the drugs and money that you want."
The prosecution believes that Melissa devised a plot involving Jericho Lindsay and his Alabama friends to rob her new boyfriend, Benjamin Grajeda.
Melissa had told them that Grajeda had thousands of dollars hidden in his apartment and he had drugs. So the plan was that they were going to come to the house and rob him.
Melissa adamantly denies masterminding the plan. She says she was just caught between two jealous lovers.
I never set this whole thing up. Everything was just becoming a total nightmare to me. Benjamin asked me to dinner, and while I was eating with him, Jericho called me. He goes, "You're with that Hispanic guy again? Call me when you're done with him." And I had this feeling like, I wonder if he's stalking us.
But detectives believe that Melissa used the phone call as a ruse to alert Jericho of Grajeda's whereabouts.
Melissa is planning this whole incident. She's on the phone to Lindsay, telling him when they're leaving, to go home.
I sent Benjamin to the store to get me some personal belongings.
According to authorities, this was actually a fool's errand that started a deadly chain of events.
She called Lindsay them and told them that Grajeda was gone. And Lindsay, Petway, and Freeman, they were parked outside the apartment. So they come in.
Melissa said, the money's in the walls somewhere. So they start pounding the walls, looking for the money, and it's nowhere to be found.
In the meantime, Grajeda comes back.
And they just beat the crap out of him. He's a tough guy. But you know, after a while, they had him.
Melissa watched as this was going on. She said, hurry, do what you're gonna do with Grajeda, but get it done quick, because this is making a lot of noise.
But Melissa insists she was caught by surprise.
All of a sudden, these men just break into the house and there was guns in their hands. So I saved my own life and I ran out of there.
Claiming that she hid behind a bush outside the apartment, Melissa listened while Jericho and his buddies took Benjamin Grajeda down.
I just heard them beating him and I remember he screamed, Melissa, help. And that just broke my heart.
The violence escalated. Jericho and his crew gagged Grajeda, stripped him down to his boxer shorts, tied him up with duct tape, and threw him in the trunk of their car.
They drove away like nothing happened.
When the three were on Kaneohe Bay Drive, Freeman says he had a change of heart. He popped the trunk, giving Grajeda a chance to escape.
Grajeda jumps out of the back of the trunk and he starts running. Lindsay realizes and he jumps out of the car with a gun and he's chasing him down the road in the middle of traffic.
Lindsay had a MAC-10 semi-automatic. Mr. Lindsay just holds that gun high up like he's in a movie and unloads a barrage of fire. This is cold-blooded.
Ann Bauer was just one of a dozen witnesses that watched the scene unfold in horror.
You could feel like this was not a nice person. There was a calmness and coldness about it. He just kept shooting, and he evidently wanted to be sure that he was dead.
Autopsy results revealed that Benjamin Grajeda was shot 16 times. He died at the scene. Witnesses helped police track down the suspects within hours. Meanwhile, back at Grajeda's apartment, Melissa tried to disappear.
She sneaks out of there and calls a cab. She pays him $200 cash and she tells him, you never saw me.
She had a big bag with her, which Mr. Lindsay would say that was the money that belonged to Mr. Grajeda. And to this day, we still don't know where it is. I believe Melissa has it.
I didn't get anything, goods, money, drugs out of the whole situation.
That evening and into the next day, detectives scoured the scene for evidence.
We recovered a rental car key, which we were able to trace back to Grajeda's residence.
With two crime scenes and two suspects in custody, it didn't take long for detectives to piece together what happened that fateful night.
Freeman talks a lot. Right away, he starts giving us that it's Melissa that set the whole thing up.
I believe Freeman said that I set it up to save his own self.
It took nearly a year after Grajeda's murder to gather enough evidence to arrest Melissa Ordonez. They did so as a result of co-defendant William Freeman's testimony.
He was twice given a polygraph test and had twice passed. Based on Freeman's credibility, then Melissa was charged with the crimes of being an accomplice to robbery, kidnapping, and burglary.
I thought, oh man, I'm gonna be in jail for a very long time.
I apologize to everybody that was affected by this.
She did get off lightly, but we had to weigh that against making sure that we get the real shooter, in this case, Mr. Lindsay.
Melissa Ordonez is serving her time in the Women's Community Correctional Center in Kailua, Hawaii. Due to good behavior, she will likely be released in August 2011. She will then serve 18 months in federal prison for violating her probation on her original drug charge.
It took this for me to realize that nothing was free. There's always a price to pay. If I would have called that police, it wouldn't have escalated that far. He wouldn't have died. I'm deeply sorry for what happened.
Coming up, a stripper's trick turns deadly.
Lana said, why are you cutting me? Quit cutting me, you know, what do you want, my wallet or something?
I just been stabbed, somebody stabbed me. I'm hurt bad. I was set up.
Hold on for EMS, hold on.
Adam Bagel intended to kill Mr. Greenwood all along.
He was supposed to knock him out and give him the money.
Tammy lied against me to cover herself.
If Tammy had said, I need $5,000, my dad would have given it just to help him out.
My name is Tammy Fox. I'm convicted of murder, and I received 45 years.
It was 3 weeks before Christmas, and Austin, Texas was abuzz with the holiday spirit. But on December 8, 1998, while people were busy shopping, police received a frantic 911 call from 51-year-old Lonnie Greenwood, declaring that he had been stabbed.
Austin, 911.
I just been stabbed. Somebody stabbed me. I'm in my car.
Hold on for EMS. Hold on.
Lonnie was in his vehicle. It was obvious that he was in extreme pain and was bleeding pretty heavily.
Detectives quickly got enough information from the injured victim to pick up 23-year-old Tammy Fox, a former stripper.
The officers basically told her that they had information that she was involved in the stabbing. She started talking, and she didn't quit.
Tammy told detectives that she and her boyfriend, 20-year-old Adam Bagel, had planned to rob Lonnie Greenwood, a client who paid her for sex. But she insisted the scheme did not include a stabbing.
She knew Greenwood from the strip club here in Austin, and it was her and Adam's idea they would rob him.
Detectives learned that Adam had also known the victim and believed that he stabbed Lonnie Greenwood as payback for firing him.
All the evidence pointed to this being more of his opportunity to get revenge than to just commit a robbery. And Tammy saw this as a chance to make a big score. I don't think she ever anticipated that Adam Bagel would try to kill him.
Tammy Fox was born in 1975. At age 3, her parents separated, and Tammy and her brother were taken in by her grandmother. By age 14, she was pregnant and married in a shotgun wedding to a 21-year-old.
Mom and my grandmother all decided that it was the right thing for us to get married, and I didn't want to, but then I was talked into doing it.
But according to Tammy, she and her new husband did not live happily ever after.
He was very abusive. He finally left.
Tammy was abandoned, but quickly sought love wherever she could find it. By the time she was in her early 20s, she had countless boyfriends and had given birth to 6 children. It was only a matter of time until Child Protective Services would take them all away.
She had a history of alcohol abuse, drug abuse, a history of being sexually abused as a child. Her main employment was working at a strip club.
I had a dance, it's topless dancing. So I had to strip down, table dancing and stuff like that. It was a lot of fun. It was easy money.
While dancing at a local strip club, Tammy met a businessman named Lonnie Greenwood.
My dad was very social. He always had lots of friends, always going out, doing things. He was able to open a small car lot.
He presented himself as a family man, businessman during the week, but he had his vices also. And I think drinking and strippers were probably his vice.
I didn't know about Tammy specifically, but I knew that my dad probably had relationships.
According to Tammy, she and Lonnie had instant chemistry.
I walked up to Lonnie and I just asked him if he wanted to dance. We were drinking and everything, and he mentioned that he would like to take the party out afterwards. Lonnie owns a yacht, and we had sex and drank, and we just kicked off from there.
Lonnie treated Tammy well, and they continued to see each other on a casual basis.
He gave her money and helped her with bills and stuff, and she was on friendly terms with him.
He was lovable and very caring.
But in October of 1998, 23-year-old Tammy hit an all-time low.
After I lost custody of my last two children, I went to self-destruction depression. I was introduced to ecstasy, started taking speed.
After getting suspended from her job at the strip club, she met 20-year-old Adam Bagel, a drug dealer, who eased her pain with more speed and coke.
Met him up at this fast food restaurant, started liking each other, so we ended up getting together and dating.
I was doing drugs, she was doing drugs too, so we just hung out.
But Adam claimed he had heard about Tammy from a conversation he'd had with, of all people, Lonnie Greenwood.
The weird thing is, I knew about her before I met her because I'd heard Lonnie talking about Tammy.
Coincidentally, Lonnie knew Adam since he was a boy.
He was an associate with my father. They had a couple different businesses together. He seemed like an all right guy.
But police argue that Adam harbored a deep-seated resentment towards Lonnie Greenwood and that it eventually led to his murder.
Mr. Greenwood owned a car lot with Adam Bagel's father. And at some point, Adam had worked there. Apparently, he was not a very good employee. And Mr. Greenwood finally had to fire him from his job there. And apparently, Adam Bagel was very upset about that.
Coming up, an appointment for sex ends in murder.
Adam rushes Mr. Greenwood. He hears Mr. Greenwood say, well, you don't need to cut me. Adam Bagel at that point is attacking him with a knife.
By the fall of 1998, 23-year-old stripper Tammy Fox had relinquished her six children to the state of Texas. Depressed and unemployed, she comforted herself with drugs and sex from 20-year-old Adam Bagel, a drug dealer. To make ends meet, Tammy also traded sex for money with men she met at a strip club. But on one November night, Tammy says she was robbed of everything she owned.
My sister had a guy that was staying with her. This guy stole everything from us, my car, clothes, money. Everything I owned was in my car.
Desperate, she begged her boss to reinstate her job at the strip club. When he refused, Tammy says she called her regulars to earn some fast cash. She set up a tryst with 51-year-old Lonnie Greenwood, a real estate salesman.
She had done these dances for him in the past, and she knew that he carried a lot of money.
But the rendezvous with Lonnie Greenwood would soon turn into something more when Tammy's drug dealer boyfriend, Adam Bagel, proposed they rob him.
The whole purpose was to get the money to buy drugs. Adam brought up the fact that we ought to rob this guy. He goes, my dad's got this business partner. We could rob him. He always got all kinds of money on him. I'm just like, whatever. And it come out to where his business partner is Lonnie.
The plan was for Tammy to meet Lonnie at a vacant apartment located in a complex where her mother lived.
Her and Adam had decided they could lure him to one of the vacant apartments and that Adam could hit him in the head with this hammer and they would rob him.
Well, Adam had a knife, too. I called Lonnie and told him that I had got a new apartment and that I wanted to come over and have fun and celebrate with me. And so he said, okay.
At 9 p.m., Lonnie showed up for his evening of fun.
Adam was hiding in the bathroom. I was supposed to give Lonnie the tour.
But their simple scheme quickly went awry.
The electricity wasn't on. When I got him by the bathroom, I was supposed to cough. That was the signal. And Adam come out and attack him.
They went into the apartment. She gave the signal to Adam Bagel, who was hiding in the bathroom. He comes out and rushes Mr. Greenwood while Tammy Fox goes into her bedroom.
I walked into that bedroom and waited, and I could hear them struggle. Lonnie said, why are you cutting me? Quit cutting me. You know, what, you want my wallet or something?
She hears Mr. Greenwood say, well, you don't need to cut me, indicating that Adam Bagel at that point is attacking him with a knife.
That's when I saw Adam running by me.
They throw the knife out the window there at the apartment, and then they then leave and go back to their apartment in the same complex.
Tammy and Adam fled to her mother's apartment, only to discover that Lonnie's wallet was empty.
It dawned on me he never paid me out of his wallet. He always paid me out of his pocket. It was all for nothing.
Adam changed into a pair of shorts. She put on a nightgown, and they both crawled into bed.
Despite being stabbed, Lonnie managed to make it to his car and called 911.
Austin Island.
I just been stabbed. Somebody stabbed me. I'm hurt bad. I was set up. I'm in my car.
Hold on for EMS. Hold on.
He was in extreme pain and was bleeding pretty heavily.
It didn't take long for police to identify Tammy and Adam as the culprits.
Mr. Greenwald told them that this person from this strip club took me to this apartment where I was robbed and attacked. They found Adam Bagel there, and they found Tammy Fox.
The officers were able to search the apartment and found evidence they believed would link them to the robbery and the stabbing. And both Adam and her were placed under arrest at that point.
We were going to take his wallet.
So then what happens?
He walks by the bathroom, and that's when Adam came out loud.
Her honesty early on helped break the case.
I told him where the knife was, and I told him where the wallet was. I just spilled it all out to him right then.
She gave clothing with blood on it. Adam had a bracelet on that DNA testing later showed had Mr. Greenwood's blood on it.
But Adam denies playing any part in the robbery or the stabbing.
Tammy never told me about robbing anybody. The clothes that she gave them were women's clothes. They never would have fit me. She's lying. She's been lying this whole time.
Adam admits being at the crime scene, but claims that he came to the location after Lonnie was stabbed.
As I'm going in, I'm attacked. I find out later on that it was Lonnie. So I'm thinking he's probably thinking that whoever attacked him is probably coming back for him.
Since Lonnie Greenwood was still alive, Tammy Fox and Adam Bagel were charged with robbery and assault with a deadly weapon. Meanwhile, Lonnie Greenwood was fighting for his life. Lonnie's daughter recalls seeing her dad for the last time.
When I got to the hospital, he was already in a coma, and we decided as a family that we would turn the machines off. It was a really difficult decision.
On December 14th, 6 days after he was attacked, Lonnie Greenwood died. At Adam's trial, Tammy testified that Adam held a long-time grudge against Lonnie Greenwood.
Adam had mentioned that Lonnie is responsible for him getting kicked out of his house when he was 12 years old, and he'd been on the streets ever since. When he started stabbing him, I think he started flashing, and he couldn't stop.
There's overwhelming evidence that Adam Bagel is the one that did the stabbing.
I never denied being there that night, but I didn't stab that man. I didn't stab Lonnie.
Only Adam Bagel had a reason to want to kill Mr. Greenwood, and only Adam Bagel had the physical evidence on his person, the bruises to his hands and face and the blood-stained clothing that indicates he was intimately involved in this offense.
Adam Bagel was convicted of capital murder and sentenced to life in prison. All his appeals were denied. Tammy Fox pled guilty to murder and received a sentence of 45 years.
Without her luring him to that room, Mr. Greenwood could very well be alive today. She's not the one that plunged the knife into his abdomen, but she created the circumstances that allowed that to happen.
My life was destroyed and my dad lost his life. I don't think that there's any sentence that Tammy or Adam could have gotten that I would have felt okay about. I've heard that, you know, Tammy says that she's found religion and prison's been the best thing that could happen to her. I'm truly envious because I don't know how to put my life back together.
I'm sorry. It wasn't supposed to turn out the way it did. It wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth it at all.